Thanks for tuning in to the Falcon Theater Podcast. I'm your host, Dean Jansen, mild-mannered manager of the Falcon Theater in Tisdale, Saskatchewan. Together with my son, Noah Jansen, the self-professed movie snob, we're going to enlighten and entertain you with our immense movie knowledge. So sit back and relax. But if you're currently driving a vehicle, don't relax too much. But enjoy this episode of the Falcon Theater Podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 9 of the Falcon Theater Podcast, where we're 100% podcast 100% of the time.
I would hope so. I mean, I feel like if it wasn't, they'd go into like a video format, well, it makes it more of a different environment. So,
hey, they do video podcasts. There's guys that do that too.
Once we get big enough, maybe we'll do that. I did like that meme that you sent me about the video killed the radio star, that it was podcast digging up the grave of the radio star.
I know, isn't that awesome? we're just bringing back radio. It's all we're doing.
One exactly. We'll be the ones that we're finally the guys that are going to revolutionize radio.
That's right. Well, maybe not you and I specifically.
No, us specifically. They will look back and they will have a statue in our name, and then they'll find something that we did and they will remove the statue because they all think that was the wrong thing.
I want to take us back to the last previous podcast where we asked the question, what's better, Goodfellas or The Godfather? I just want a little shout out to Thomas Abbott, who messaged me and said that my wife was right, as she always is, that Goodfellas is better. He specified that the women are always right. And I told him, I said, you know, the women aren't always right. It's just not a good idea to correct them.
I've learned that, unfortunately, a little bit of the hard way. But, you know, it's a work in progress. I still feel like I have lots to learn.
Hey, son, remember what I told you.
You can be right
or you can be
happy.
Yeah, exactly. You could be right or you could be happy. So live your life happy.
Doesn't exactly. Right.
Okay, so what's happening at the Falcon Theater? Well, a lot's happening, actually. The renovations are continuing, looking fantastic. The three sides have now, not only is the stucco gone and the repair's been done, but the insulation is up and the tin is up on the three sides. And the demolition has happened on the front, and they've started to put the insulation up on the front.
So, what is this going to essentially mean for the theater this summer? Like, what are we looking at with these, the insulation, the renovations? Are you kind of expecting with the theater besides it looking very pretty?
Well, I'm hoping that it keeps the theater a little bit cooler in the summer and costs less to heat it in the winter.
I mean, hey, that's going to be a good thing, because it can get pretty warm in there, especially when everybody's coming out for the movies.
Exactly. Yeah, Barbie was the worst last summer. That was like a 38-degree day.
That's just what Ryan Gosling does to people, though. It just makes people, you know, hot and sweaty.
That's right. Wasn't Margot Robbie. It was
Ryan. Oh, no. Oh, 100% Ryan.
Also, quite exciting, the brand new poster boxes, the light-up poster boxes for the front of the building arrived yesterday, and they look pretty sweet.
I can't wait to see those. That'll look so good.
So no more those chicken wire frames that we've had before. We've got, you know, moving into the 20th century with light-up poster boxes for the front.
What's next in the future? Like, what are we going to come up with next? It's wild.
I know, right? Like flying cars, maybe, but probably not.
I hope not. I don't trust people in driving cars.
Actually, it was pretty interesting. The poster boxes were shipped from China on Sunday, and I received them here in Tisdale on Tuesday.
Maybe they were sent by flying car.
Well, flying something, absolutely. Yeah. when I ordered and they said they'd be here by May 31st. And I'm like, okay, there's no way that they can get them from China to here and by that time. But lo and behold, they were here before May 31st. I was pretty impressed.
That's pretty amazing, honestly.
Also at the theater coming soon this weekend. In fact, we have the movie If,
which sounds like it's going to be well attended. I have a lot of people telling me they want to come. The weekend after, we have the Fall Guy, which I think we're going to talk about a little more later on. And then the Garfield movie after that. So a couple of kids movies coming up with a movie for us Gen Xers in the middle.
That's the Garfield movie, right? That's the Gen X movie.
That's right. Yeah.
I'll be honest. I didn't even know they were making a new Garfield movie till I was going over the notes for this episode.
Yeah, I know. I was a little surprised too. I don't know, a month ago, I guess, I was looking at the upcoming movie schedule, trying to book movies, and I'm like, Garfield movie? Oh, I didn't know they were doing a Garfield movie. So
now the question is, will you be serving lasagna for this movie?
Oh, well, I'll maybe be eating lasagna. I don't know. I've
just sitting there in the back, just eating a whole tray of lasagna.
Just taking their money with tomato sauce all over my fingers.
Oh, thank you very much. Enjoy your movie.
Nobody will want change.
It's fine. You keep it. Oh, you're so generous. Would you like some? No, I'm good. Please stop talking to me. Chew with your mouth closed, please.
Okay. Sorry. Moving on. What do we got in the movie discussions department, son?
Well, there's been like we're coming up to summertime here, and summer kind of that May to like kind of end of August. That's always a bit of a busy time for the big movies. That's like, you know, the big releases come out until, you know, you start to see it again in like November, December with like around Christmas time. So, you know, a few things that are coming up now. There's the Wolverine Deadpool movie that's coming out this summer. One thing that I personally got very, very excited for just earlier this week, filmmaker David Lynch revealed that apparently he has an exciting announcement coming on June 5th. He has a YouTube channel, and he just has like every day, he just posts a video and just kind of talks about his thoughts. Like he's done it like frequently, like ever since COVID. And he was talking about how he has a project and he's going to be talking about it come June 5th. So what that exactly
David Lynch guy you're speaking of?
Well, you know, he's a, how do you describe David Lynch? He is a very absurdist kind of filmmaker. A lot of people would
right
know
up
him.
Your alley.
Right up my alley. He's very notable for making the TV show Twin Peaks. That's kind of, I think, one of his big claims to fame. He also made The Elephant Man, which won a plethora of Academy Awards. And then famously...
Didn't The Elephant Man come out in like the 30s or something?
No, it was 1980. It was just filmed to look like that.
No, I'm pretty sure there was like an original that came out like
years ago. I mean, possibly, but the one I'm talking about was made by David Lynch in the 80s, and then he also made...
I thought maybe he was just really old.
Well, he is very old now. He's like, I think, close to being in his 80s now, but he also made the original Dune movie, which was not well-received, and he, after that, swore off ever doing a big studio movie due to just the hassle. But he's a very absurdist kind of filmmaker. One of my personal favorite movies, Eraserhead, is a very, very strange movie. Like to ask, if you were to ask David Lynch, what is this movie about? He will never tell you, because I don't think even he really knows what it is. But the thing about him is he always is making something that is just completely original. And it's so interesting. I saw a clip once of him when he was filming, because they brought back Twin Peaks in 2017 to kind of tie up the story 20 years later. And there's a clip of him getting ready to set up a shot, and one of the producers makes a comment about how they have to make this scene not so long, and he goes off. He says, who the F cares about how long the goddamn scene is? Just let me film. And he gets all, like, upset about it, because he's known for, you know, having a shot of, you know, scenery for 2 minutes, and you just watch it. Very similar to kind of, like, the Zone of Interest, how they did with that. His last movie, though, the last time he actually had a movie come out was 2006, so it's been... You know, by the time whatever this project is, if it is a movie, it'll be over 20 years since he made a movie. So I'm excited to hear what it could entail. But I guess we're just gonna have to find out next week and see what it is.
So I just looked it up, and no, there was not an Elephant Man before the 1980 Elephant Man.
Oh, I think it's just filmed to look that way. A little, I guess, mini Noah knows before we get into the meat of that later. The 1980 Elephant Man movie was actually partially produced and like helped made by Mel Brooks, like from Spaceballs fame.
Yeah.
But he specifically did not want his name to be added on like the production credits because he didn't want people coming in thinking the movie was going to be a Mel Brooks comedy and stuff, because it's a very serious movie. So he had his name, like he helped out quite a bit, but he had his name completely removed from the creation of the film.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, no, David Lynch is one of those guys that I think is, you know, definitely an amazing mark and influence in film. So, you know, it's always interesting to see what he'll bring next.
There was always that, you know, that Disney Elephant Man movie, the cartoon.
Dumbo?
No. You know, with the elephant guy and the Notre Dame and the
Hunchback? That's a completely... The Elephant Man was a real person.
Yeah, I know. You mean the Hunchback wasn't? I thought he was.
I'm sure there have been Hunchbacks.
Sorry. I digress. I've actually never watched Twin Peaks.
Really? It's the first season is really good. The first season, it's had a, like, that was really David Lynch, you know, having full creative control. And then once the second season came in, there were a lot of kind of behind the scenes issues. And he actually, about halfway through making season two, walked away. He's like, you know what? Screw this. And it was like people who were, you know, the executives trying to make a David Lynch-esque story without David Lynch. So Twin Peaks, kind of in the middle, is very heavily criticized for just losing kind of focus on what it is. And then I believe he came back and kind of helped finish up the last part of season two. And then 20 years later, he came back and did a follow-up season three, as well as doing the movie Fire Walk With Me a couple years after the original series had ended. So it's a very, like, because it's got like a little bit of like an X-Files-esque kind of type thing, like Kyle MacLachlan, who, you know, he is very famously has worked with David Lynch on multiple projects, like the original Dune. But, you know, Twin Peaks and him, like, they're very, very close with what their work is. So, yeah, no, it's...
Are you recommending that I take time out of my busy life and
observe this show? Well, I'm just saying you're going to have a lot of time coming up here soon, so...
Well, if it's anything like when you raved about this movie Clerks, and then I tried to watch it and couldn't, you know.
Okay, Clerks is, that is in my top 10. Don't even come at me with that. You got to work in retail to understand the qualms that people have.
should we at the end have a Clerks yay or nay vote?
Yeah, if you've seen Clerks. If you've seen Clerks, let us know.
If you actually finished watching Clerks.
No, it's a great movie. That was when I was in high school, Dad. That movie I would put on almost every night to fall asleep to it.
It defines you, does it?
It really does. I don't. I wasn't even supposed to be here today. I say that all the time.
Okay. So I was reading the other day about the doom and gloom in the movie industry. There's a lot of doom and gloom out there right now because audiences are down big time. I was reading that like the largest grossing movie this year so far is Dune Part 2. It made $82 million. There hasn't been a $100 million opening this year. Last year there were five movies that opened with over $100 million on the opening weekend. But there's been nothing this year to even come close to that. Now they're saying that the new Pixar movie Inside Out 2, they're hoping it earns 80 to 85 million opening weekend, so it might get close to Dune. But Pixar's had a lot of duds in the last 4 years.
Well, and you know, the thing about it, like I was kind of thinking back, I can't remember the last Pixar movie I saw in a theater. But the thing about it is, I think with a big change in the rise of the streaming services, and I think it's a bit of the effect from COVID, is movies are moving from the theater to at-home media a lot faster than they were in the past. Like, I remember even when, say, The Force Awakens came out, I was like, you know, like counting down the days until they were going to announce the DVD release. And I don't think it, like, it came out in December. I don't think the DVDs were coming out till like the following summer or a little bit later, like getting ready for the next Christmas season, you know? And with Pixar, like, their last big movies, Onward, Soul, Luca, Turning Red, Lightyear, and Elemental, all of those movies were, if they were released in theaters, they were also, I believe, being released on Disney Plus, if not the same day, like less than a month after those came out. And of those ones that came out, I didn't see any of them in theaters. I've seen them, but I all saw them on Disney Plus. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I mean, a bit of it is, you know, I think it's cheaper. It's cheaper to see it at home and stuff like that. But even stuff like that movie, The Fall Guy, you know, you guys are getting in theaters now, but it's already available for on-demand streaming. But again,
now,
I think...
That, just with that being said, it isn't like streaming for free.
No, it's, no, it's like you have to rent it or buy it on digital.
It's like 20, it's over $20 to mm-hmm. rent it, right?
Yeah, exactly, you know.
If you're bringing it, if you're watching with a family of four, you know, yeah, that's going to be cheaper. And actually, I was reading that The Fall Guy wasn't actually scheduled to go into streaming for another month or so, but when it did so poorly at the theaters, they rushed it to streaming even faster.
Interesting. Well, I know even stuff like... I believe it was the Black Widow movie that came out a couple of years ago with Scarlett Johansson. She actually sued Disney because there was an expected of how many weeks it was going to be in theaters, and they moved it to Disney Plus a lot sooner. And Scarlett Johansson was quite upset by that, and she sued. I believe actually she won against Disney
because her wages were tied to how much it made in the theaters.
Exactly, and they pulled it from there. So. It's curious to kind of see the environment now that we're seeing with studios. In how they are, how long they'll keep stuff in theaters and how long they want to market it for and everything. So,
and it really affects a small independent theaters like the Falcon Theater, because when they release a movie, they make theaters sign like a 3 to 4 week commitment that they will keep it in their theater for 3 to 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. And us small independent theaters can't do that. I couldn't afford to show the same movie for 4 weeks, or I would have everybody the first week and I would have an empty theater for 3 weeks. And so I have to wait a month to get the movie because of the theater's rules or the studio's rules. And so by that time now it's already being streamed. And
so I'm curious if maybe we could see in the next year or so if there'll be a change in that. Maybe they'll start to be a little more lenient for certain movies getting an opening release kind of weekend in those smaller theaters, and just being able to do it for one or even just maybe even 2 weeks, you know what I mean?
They need to have a separate set of rules for us little independent theaters that are trying to survive.
But I think a bit of that too comes from, I feel like in the movie making world, there's two mindsets behind it. There are the people that, you know, are making the movie to make money, and there's the people that are making the movie as an experience to be watched and enjoyed, and the art behind it, you know? So I think it also kind of depends on the kind of the trajectory on how the studio and the people making the movie, how they want to go about it. I mean, at the end of the day, I think they all want to make money, obviously, you know, it's a lot of money being put into it. But, you know, there's a lot of filmmakers out there that have such a high respect for small local theaters. Like Quentin Tarantino, he owns a small theater in Los Angeles that plays like just old like 60s movies. It's a theater he used to go to as a kid. You know, he owns it. He brings in like local movies all the time because he has said before, like, he never went to film school. He went and watched films. So doing stuff like that and showing these classics and showing, you know, great pieces of art like that, that is what's really gonna, you know, affect the next generation of filmmakers that come out there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Who knows? Who knows? One of you that are coming to our movie theater, maybe you're going to be the next, Francis Ford Coppola or something like that, you know?
Or Tarantino.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Even like our theater. And I think a lot of this has to do with, not the streaming per se, because there was the same thing last year. But the strike last year is still having a big mm-hmm. impact on movies right now. Like at the Falcon Theater right now, I was just looking at our numbers and we're down 34% compared to last year at this time in attendance. Now, Super Mario Weekend was in there and that was an anomaly because we had, over 800 people that weekend.
Yeah.
But even if you take that down to a normal, say 200 people, as we would normally get for a children's weekend, we're still down 20% in attendance from last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. So that, there's a lot of factors at play. So for everyone that's listening here, that's coming out, thank you for coming out and still supporting the theater. The ones that make it possible,
The other shout out I want to give is not just like, I get that not everybody wants to come see every movie, that every movie isn't, one that's going to hit for you. But we have so many people in and around our area that come for takeout popcorn. So even if you aren't coming to the movie, you come for takeout popcorn because that helps as well. Like, that's awesome. We have some regulars that come, every week or two and get takeout. I appreciate those people because that support really helps too.
And I want to thank people for not buying up all the popcorn as much as they can, because I like getting the leftover popcorn when I come and visit and get to take it all back home with me.
When is this come and visit thing?
It's up. I was home a month ago. Yeah, a month ago.
Were you?
Yeah, for my reunion.
For your reunion? Did I even see you?
Briefly. We had breakfast.
I don't even remember. It's been so long.
It's that old age. You're on retirement time now. You're not remembering things. So what day of the week is it right now? I don't even know.
Oh, I just thought of something. We didn't actually introduce ourselves in the welcomes at the start of the podcast.
If you're starting about episode 9, I'm sorry. You can go back. That's their own problem. They can guess. They can make up our own names.
They can just decide if they want to keep listening to us or not.
Exactly.
I got this awesome podcast. I started on episode 9.
That's weird. even with this past weekend, we saw both the Furiosa movie, which is the Mad Max Fury Road prequel, and then the Garfield movie we were just talking about. They both premiered with a very a much lower expected box office return, only both pulling in about $30 million domestically each. So for Memorial Day weekend, which for that's the United States, that's their May long weekend, which happens the weekend after ours. That's typically one of the best weekends for movies. Like it's kind of notable for having Avengers Infinity War came out on that weekend to kind of give an example of how big of a deal it is, It
kind of kicks off their summer movie schedule, doesn't it?
Yeah. And so for this year, it was one of the worst Memorial Day weekend releases since 1995 when Casper, the friendly ghost, that really bad CGI Casper. It made $22 million on its opening weekend. And so unfortunately, Furiosa, I have a good friend of mine went and saw it and said it was visually, it is such a breathtaking movie to see in the movie theater. Fury Road was such an amazing movie experience. But unfortunately, if things don't start looking up, it's a bit of a poor start, but it had a budget of over $150 million. So it's got a ways to go to break even in the money department. So,
well, we are playing Furiosa here. It's booked in for June 21st, 22nd, 23rd. So that's probably after Deadpool. Furiosa is probably the movie I was most looking forward to this year.
Yeah, I that's definitely is going to be the next movie that I'm going to Probably go out of my way to see. I've been very excited for it. And apparently, Anya Taylor-Joy is, and Chris Hemsworth, both of them are, you know, they're both quite strong in the movie.
Now, this morning we were watching, I can't remember, a TV show thing, and they had Chris Hemsworth. And so they played a clip from the movie. And there's one thing I got to say about it. It looked really crisp and clear. And I'm wondering, like, to me, it almost seemed too much. Like, the Mad Max movies need to be gritty. And I don't know. I'm a little bit.
I do think I remember reading that there was a little bit more CGI used in this movie compared to Fury Road.
I need to go back and rewatch Fury Road before Fury
gets here. I want to do that as well. Yeah, 100%.
In case you're not up on these movies, so Fury Road came out, I don't know, a few years ago, and one of the
nine years ago, I think.
And one of the main characters in it, her name's Furiosa. So this movie is now a prequel telling her backstory, is what.
And a thing is, too, about that, I feel like Furiosa, this movie, it maybe would have done a bit better if it came out a little bit more soon after Fury Road. Because Fury Road, it did amazing, and it won a bunch of Oscars and everything, which was a huge shock for a big kind of action-y, post-apocalyptic movie to do that well at the Oscars. And I feel like if it maybe would have came out a little bit sooner after, it could have been still riding a little bit of the wave of Mad Max fever, you know, because I feel like that's kind of, you know, died down a little bit. And I think COVID had a bit to do with it. Like, I think they kind of got delayed with producing and making the movie because of that. But regardless, it's the one that I'm very excited to get the chance to see.
I agree. I'm pumped. So it was one when I do my bookings, I had all my bookings until the first week of July, except for the weekend of Furiosa. I hadn't gotten confirmation on it. I was waiting and waiting and waiting. And it's like, of course, the one that I'm most excited for is the one that I'm waiting for the most. So
no, 100%. Yeah. And like, and so like kind of going off of to the whole, you know, movie viewership being down. I mean, I do think there's a couple factors that kind of play into that. Now, I know you guys here at the Falcon, like, you have a little bit more kind of control with, you know, your prices and everything like that. And I would argue that you guys have, you know, maybe I'm slightly biased, but very fair prices when it comes to your snacks and, you know, the ticket prices. But like coming into the city, it's an expensive, you know, thing to go to the movie theaters. Even for two people, for two tickets, and if you each get a popcorn and a drink, I mean, you could easily be looking at spending close to $60, let alone if it's a family going to a movie. Like, I think if you guys come down, we go to the movie, it's easily over, you know, $100 for all of us to go. And then take into account maybe like a, you know, a young couple that has kids and they want to go to a movie, you have to also take into account they'd have to get a babysitter. So I think with just kind of the increase of kind of cost of living and everything kind of going up in price, it's people aren't as, you know, freely spending their money. I mean, we've seen that with restaurants and everything too. A lot of them have been hurting because of, you know, just people not having as much free money to go out and spend on that, you know.
The disposable income is down.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like I know here in Regina, I've been at Costco. They sell these kind of little like essentially, like what it is, it's for the Landmark movies, and for like $35, you get two tickets, two popcorns, and two drinks for Landmark for any movie for like $35, and like that's a deal that I can't remember the last time I went to like Cineplex, because I just go to get the Landmark ones, and it makes it a lot more affordable for me to go see a movie, or I go to the IMAX, which has much better prices than these kind of big corporate like mega theater corporations. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like the ticket costs at IMAX are higher, but their snack prices are way more affordable.
I would honestly the prices of the IMAX are probably, say, comparable to Cineplex. It's about
better than me.
It's about $15 to $17 for an IMAX ticket. Yeah, so I mean, and you get to see them in the IMAX too, which is always
and cool. And at the Falcon Theater for an adult, it's $10.
Exactly,
way more affordable.
Way more affordable. Another thing, honestly, and this might make me sound like a cranky old man, but I feel like a big thing too with movie theaters is attention span. There is, I think, with the rise of social media and, you know, TikTok and all these things giving these, you know, quick instant videos that grab your attention right away, it's kind of, I think, messed with people's how we view, you know, content and media. Like the amount of times that I am scrolling through my phone on TikTok and there'll just be like an entire movie put onto TikTok with like a little like game or some, you know, kind of ASMR thing on the background. And, you know, I'll be honest, sometimes I've watched a couple minutes of the movie just because I'm like, oh, okay, this is an interesting scene, but it keeps people's attention in that sense. And I think there's a lot of people that maybe who would have been not adults pre-COVID, and now COVID is over and theaters are open, and they don't have that same, you know, attention span or what have you, and that instant gratification for a, you know, a slower burn movie or something like that. Like, you know, take something like back in the 70s when Taxi Driver, when it came out, you know, Taxi Driver is one of Scorsese's best movies. Would that movie have done as well nowadays? Probably not, because it's a very slow build up movie. But back then they didn't have cell phones to, you know, keep distracting you and everything like that. So I think that's another kind of factor that might play into, you know,
I think that directors and movie producers, I think they need to really read their audience better and stop making movies that are 2.5 hours long or more.
Well, there was
unless it's like an action movie that keeps you on the edge of your seat. I know, like, Killers of the Flower Moon, I had so many people say, well, I wanted to come see it, but I couldn't sit there for over 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I can't blame them.
I mean, me personally, like, I love those kind of movies, but I would say I'm a niche outlier in that. There was a poll recently that came out for, yeah, I think it might have been American moviegoers, but they did a poll on what is the best runtime for a movie, and the majority of people said 90 minutes is the majority runtime. I personally, I like a movie that's right around that 2 hour mark. But I think there also comes a lot to say when you are able to tell the story in a concise fashion. You know what I mean? Like, it's like as a teacher, you would know, like, it was students writing an essay. You could write a 20-page essay, but it's more impressive if you can concise that into 10 pages, you know, and explain yourself better instead of just kind of rambling or including stuff that isn't relevant to the story at hand. You know what I mean?
I wouldn't know. I've never had a student write an essay.
You also teach science, so. But I think that's a big part of that. It doesn't, you know, people don't want to, or they want to go and they want to watch a streaming service and they can, you know, put on the movie or put on a TV show that sometimes, honestly, some of the new streaming shows have the budget and quality of some of the new movies out there. And so you can get. But I'm saying you can get a story, but they can stop it along the way and they can. Yeah. So it's not like it's not as big of a time commitment because they can do it on their time. You know,
the thing about the streaming services is they throw a ton of shit at the wall and then see what sticks.
100%. There's a lot of crap.
There's a lot of crap. And you have to sort through it.
And I wouldn't exactly say that with like the way things are going with movies and theaters, I wouldn't say essentially that they're dying as a lot of articles have said. I think it's just a very large cultural change in movies. And I think a big part about it too is you see these big, big movies that have budgets of, you know, the $300-400 million, and then, you know, they'll have even maybe a good opening weekend of, you know, $100 million, but they're making only a quarter of what their budget was. I think maybe a bit of it too is a lot of these actors need to come to the realization that they need to take a pay cut themselves to help push their art more, because them taking like, oh, I need to be paid $300 million to do this movie, well, that's gonna hurt the return and hurt for future movies to get made because they needed to get so much money. Do you know what I mean?
I do, yeah. I can't see actors doing that.
I can't either. It'd be something that would help. And I mean, another thing too, and this is, again, this is me sounding like a grumpy old man, but I think a big part of some people not wanting to go to theaters is theater etiquette, I feel like, has very much gone in the wrong direction in the last couple of years. I went and saw the new Planet of the Apes movie last week, and I'll discuss more later. Fantastic movie. Highly, highly recommend. It was such a good movie, but I gotta say, it might have been one of the worst theater experiences I've had to deal with. Showing up at the movie theater, there's the lineup and everything, and there was a group of probably a dozen people not really lined up in the line, but in like a circle. So three lines had kind of formed and people didn't really know where to stand. And then they kind of realized and they kind of shuffled into a line. And then we ended up being in the wrong part of it, which meant we got put like all the way to the back when we'd already been waiting for a bit. And then during the movie, there was quite a few instances of people around us having conversations, I would say at a volume that we're talking right now, which is, you know, too loud for when the movie is starting. Like, if you want to whisper something or have a little, like, that's fine. But there were people that a couple times had to say, hey, the movie's on, stop talking. And then third, which is my personal, my biggest movie pet peeve. And if you guys ever come to the movie theater, please, I beg you, do not do this. This is, I think, the most disrespectful thing you could do, besides maybe just walking around and flipping people off.
I'm doing that at the next movie.
You just gonna walk around. Oh, that was rude. People on their phones, please, please put away. It's 90 minutes to 2.5 hours. You can put your phone away for that time. Or if you really need to, if you need to send a text or make a call, just step out of the movie theater. I lost track watching Planet of the Apes for the amount of people pulling out their phones. And that's not just Planet of the Apes. I would say the last couple times I've gone to a movie theater, at least here in the city, at least once there has been a person pulling out their phone in my vicinity. And it, for me, it immediately, I catch in the corner of my eye and it takes me out of the movie theater. And it's just, it's so disrespectful to everybody around, sitting and everything like that. At one point, somebody took a picture during the movie with a flash, you know, and I'm like,
what are you taking a picture of?
The monkeys, I guess. They're not real monkeys. They're like, so I don't know.
I can't believe how real these monkeys look. I got to get a picture of these.
I can't wait to show this. I can't wait to show this. I got to believe what I saw.
You faded out. You got to say that again.
I said he's going to go home and show his monkey, be like, I can't believe how realistic. I'll have to show the monkey I have at home. It's, you know, like, it's just such a selfish thing to do. You know, if you were maybe the only person in the entire movie theater, okay, sure, you can pull your phone. But honestly, all this stuff was going on around me and it really was distracting. And it kind of, deep down, as much as I was happy that it was like a, you know, it wasn't sold out, but it was a packed theater for Planet of the Apes. Deep down, I kind of was wishing it wasn't, because it really wrecks the experience for everyone else. And I think a big part of that is people are just lacking the etiquette. So, that's a big thing for me.
I have in my pre-show a whole bunch of don't take your cell phone out things in the pre-show. And I've still had to go around and talk to people and say, put away your phone. And you know what, but on the other hand, I've seen people who've gotten up and left the theater so that they could text or talk. They come out in the concession and do it. And that's great. I absolutely think that's awesome.
And here's the thing. If you're watching a movie and whatever is on your phone is so important that you have to respond, then clearly you can step out of the movie theater for a couple of minutes, because obviously what's happening in front of the screen isn't as important to what's happening on your phone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
100%. Definitely 100%. I agree with everything you just said.
You better 100% agree with that. And if I see you'd be lucky it's my dad just asked you to put it away, because I'd just be out there breaking your phone if it was me.
No, but not everything is doom and gloom in the movie industry. I was just reading that IMAX has a 6-year expansion plan where they're planning on expanding across the globe over the next 6 years. So obviously, if they're planning on expanding, then they must be doing well.
I think we talked about that in one of the past episodes, how movie viewership is down, but the more premium viewership has increased, which that makes me very happy. It would be cool for Saskatoon to, as much as it would probably maybe take away a bit from Regina, it'd be cool if Saskatoon could get an IMAX-like screen. You know what I mean?
I think we could support both.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Well, we could support one in Tisdale. Just make, I mean, our screen almost is an IMAX screen. It's like the next best thing, right?
Exactly. It's not a Lamborghini. It's just, you know, a very nice Corvette.
So when we were prepping this, and we were, you know, talking about all this doom and gloom around and the etiquette, and I thought, you know, what does bring people out to the theater? Like, what makes the theater experience better than sitting home? Because we know that sometimes there are rude people around you. So what are some of the things that are going to bring you out to the theater?
You know, this is a thing for me, but I mean, one, the nostalgia. I mean, growing up, going to movie theaters, the experience behind it, the excitement behind it. And when there is, you know, respectful people, it can be a great sense of community, going and seeing a comedy and everybody's laughing together, and, or, you know, the going and seeing, you know, Avengers Endgame at the final scene when all of them come out and hearing everybody in the crowd cheer, like the energy behind that is just, it is so just invigorating. A big part for me, the smell. I just love the smell of the movie. Like, you come in from outside and it's, you know, it's whatever, it's nothing, it's outside. And then you walk in and you just get that, like, that blast of, you know, popcorn in your nose and dried soda sticking to your feet and everything, you know, like, that's such a big part for me.
The Falcon Theater has a unique smell all its own, too. Old building, you know.
That's what the renovations are for. You're getting rid of all that.
Oh, no. We're keeping the old building smell, absolutely.
Oh, good.
You know, for me, The two things that I love about the theater is the screen and the sound. Like
100%.
And you can talk about the screen size, which is important, but the screen ratio is the thing a lot of people don't realize. Mm-hmm. Your TV at home is in 16:9, which is a 1.78 ratio. In the theaters, most movies are at a 2.39 ratio. And what that means is you get more to see. The picture is wider and more vast, and you get more of a picture. The one you see at home has been cropped off, and you don't get to that experience, that width that you get at the movie theater. And I don't care what kind of, and we've talked about the sound before, so I'm not going to belabor it, but I don't care what kind of sound system you have at home. It is not going to have the richness and fullness of the movie theater.
No, yeah, I completely agree with that. And I mean, even like for your guys' screen compared to when, you know, I went and saw Dune 2 in the IMAX, like a big part of what the marketing behind it was, there was more movie. Like there was, I think, 40% more movie you got to see since they shot it on the IMAX cameras. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's more immersive that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's one thing I want to speak to our little theater. A lot of people come in and sit at the back of the theater, and honestly, it's almost the worst place to sit. But probably front row would be worse than back row. But the back of the theater is not of our theater anyway, is not the place to sit because you're too far from the screen, and you're actually underneath the surround sound, so you don't actually get the full effect of the surround sound. And another thing, and I wish this didn't happen, but you can hear the concession, the creaks, the movement, and the talk, like when people come in to order stuff. If you're in the back row, you're going to hear that a little bit, and hopefully it's not too distracting. We do our best to be quiet as much as possible, but it's going to be there. Whereas if you sit at the front of the red seats in our theater, or a few rows back in those red seats, that is where the sound has been optimized for our theater. And that is the best viewing experience in the Falcon Theater, in my opinion. Probably the front three rows of red seats.
You make those the VIP seats.
That's what if I could, I would. Yeah, absolutely.
Just move a big lazy man chair right there. That could be like the special chair.
I would love to put, you know, a bunch of really premium seating in those three rows, and you have to pay a little extra to sit in those. And yeah, that would be awesome. But, you know, anyway, there's lots of good reasons to come out to the theater.
And you know what, anybody listen to this, you can also, like, you know, tell us why are theaters important to you, and why is it so big for you to come to the movie theater? Like, what makes it, you know, what would be the word, like, more, I can't think of the one, I'm having a brain fart, inviting and tantalizing to come see it at a movie theater. You know what I mean?
There is also the popcorn.
Well, yes, the popcorn. I love how many years did we try and get as close to movie theater-esque popcorn, and eventually you just said, you know what, screw this, I'm just going to run a theater, and then we can have all the movie theater popcorn we can.
Exactly. I remember we bought that little popcorn machine. We bought how many different popcorn machines?
Oh,
we tried different oils. We have the best popcorn.
You can't beat it.
Yeah. And like I mentioned earlier, if you don't want to come to the movie or you can't come to the movie, you can always stop in for takeout.
Exactly.
So, moving on. What have you been watching lately?
So like I said, I saw the new Planet of the Apes. And highly, highly would recommend it. If you enjoyed the last kind of new trilogy that came out, that was, I think, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and... drawn a blank on the last one, but the last trilogy, you'll very much love this movie. It takes place, like, I think a couple hundred years after those movies, so the apes have evolved even more into actual societies and everything. But honestly, like, some of the shots of the apes, like the fur and everything, it legitimately actually looked like they were not, you know, motion capture, that they were actual apes. Like, I won't spoil, but there's this one scene where the main ape, named Noah, funny enough,
nice,
had like bits of ash on his fur, and just the way, like, the ash was, like, sitting on his fur, and like his fur was moving, it looked so lifelike. It had no points when I was watching the movie did it feel like it was dragging on at any point. Like, it was a very well-paced movie that, you know, kind of kept me guessing as to what direction they were going to go. And at the end, it left me excited to see what they're going to do next in the Planet of the Apes world and everything like that. So, when it comes to the Falcon, I would highly recommend people come out and watch it. So many times too, like the world, you know, the old human world, it's grown over now, and sometimes there's a couple shots they just let you kind of take it in, you know, they let you live in the world for a bit and see the scenery and everything. And you know what, it was actually really funny too. There was a lot of moments that had me laughing out loud, not rolling on the floor laughing, but definitely laughing out loud. So yeah, no, definitely probably my favorite watch since our last podcast episode.
And just so everybody knows, we're going to have that at the Falcon Theater on June 28th, 29th, and 30th, which I think is the long weekend. So
is that would be the week after Furiosa? Hey,
yeah, we're going to have two big movies in a row there.
It is the year of the monkey this year.
Well, you fit right in then, son.
Well, I smell like one too.
Your mother and I have been watching Bodkin on Netflix.
Have you finished it yet?
We have not. We're almost done. But
okay, yeah.
I was talking to a coworker today about it, and she asked, "Is it good?" And I'm like, "You know what? I'm still debating on whether it's good. I haven't decided yet."
It didn't go the direction I was expecting. What episode are you on?
I forget.
Okay.
I could look it up, but I'm not gonna.
That's fair. It didn't go the direction I was expecting, but I finished it in a couple days. I found it was a really quick, easy watch. It left me once things kind of start piecing together and everything like that, I was like, oh, okay. And it did leave me kind of like, I'm curious. I don't know if they're going to do another season of it, but I really enjoyed. I mean, like, we're sucker for anything that's going to be Irish or anything
and,
like that.
Yeah, it's set in a fictional town in Ireland, and so that's why we watched it. Yeah, well, that's why we started watching it.
I love, though, just like the dialogue between, you know, like a lot of the reoccurring thing, which is funny because it's about a guy who runs a podcast, and they keep saying it's like, oh, and people will listen to that.
Yeah, I know, right?
Jody and I were dying laughing. We kept on making jokes that was our podcast of us trying to do something. Oh, and people will listen to that.
So what do you know, son?
What do I know? So I read something really interesting. So recently, I think this is earlier in the month, filmmaker Roger Corman passed away at 98 years old. So a lot of you might not know him by name, but his effect on film is definitely one that you would be aware of. Like, he has, I would say, like, one of the most influential filmmakers out there. A lot of famous directors have stated that, you know, he was such a huge early influence on their careers. Like directors like Francis Ford Coppola, Martin Scorsese, Ron Howard, Joe Dante, James Cameron, either like had him as a producer or co-directed, or were just kind of inspired by a lot of his movies. And then actors like Jack Nicholson, Peter Fonda, Bruce Dern, Tommy Lee Jones all had some of their breakout roles in his movies. He was kind of known more as like a B-movie director. Like, I think he made like The Death Race 2000 and Little Shop of Horrors and stuff like that. So they were never like these big budget movies, but they were always, you know, very, you could tell his heart was being put into these kind of, you know, more obscure, lower budget movies. A lot of the actors and directors that he collaborated with, who then, you know, further on down the lines became big in their own right, actually had him come on and act in small roles. So he had roles in The Godfather 2 and Silence of the Lambs and Apollo 13. And that was just his, you know, as a thank you to helping them kind of kickstart their careers. So the thing that when he kind of recently passed away, and I was doing some reading, that it was a little bit of like a rabbit hole, and I thought was really interesting. So one of the movies that he directed was from 1954, and it was a little movie called The Fast and the Furious.
Oh, now, okay. Fast I've seen that movie.
Well, have you though?
No. So not the 1954 version.
Fast forward to the 2000s when Universal was wanting to make their own Fast and the Furious movie, and they also wanted to use stock footage from his original film. So they needed to get his permission to, you know, use the footage and use the title. And after a bit of back and forth, Roger Corman, he allowed for them to use that title on the film, but on one condition. The condition was that Roger Corman would retain the rights to all numbered sequels for the Fast and the Furious. So Fast and the Furious 2, Fast and the Furious 3. So that is why for the Fast and the Furious series, all of the sequels have such weird names like Too Fast, Too Furious, Fast 5, Fast X, The Fate of the Furious, Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Because Roger Corman owns all of the rights to the sequel names. Why did he do this? We don't really know. He was kind of one of those just weird artsy kind of guys, so it might have been a control thing. It might have just been something he thought was funny, or maybe he thought that he would be able to make some money because they were going to name it, and then they kind of did a thing. But whether or not, I thought that was a really interesting on how, you know, this little B-movie from the 50s, you know, how it affected I mean, one of the biggest modern movie franchises out right now, the Fast and Furious series.
It's really more of a superhero movie than anything now.
100%. Yeah. Well, apparently the original Fast and the Furious movie that came out in the 50s, it was originally going to be called Race Wars, and I think it was maybe a good idea. They didn't go with that title. I don't know how well that would have.
I want to see Race Wars.
Well, it is in the movie. Apparently, it is, the race is called the Race War. So they just didn't title it like that.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah. So that's the Noah knows of how Roger Corman pretty much single-handedly shaped so much of Hollywood and filmmaking that we know today.
Oh, that's awesome. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
So, miscellaneous question to end things off this one. What is the hardest to watch scene or thing you've seen in a film?
Do you want to go first? Do you want
I'll go first.
Okay.
For me, I thought about this. It's Saving Private Ryan. And the start of it is hard to watch. I've never felt so numb as I did at the start of Saving Private Ryan. But the scene that was the hardest to watch, and still to this day, if I watch Saving Private Ryan, I can't watch this. I will like fast forward it, or it's the knife scene. It's the scene where the Milesh? I forget. Anyway, he's fighting with the German, and his buddy is there, but he's frozen in fear. And him and the guy are fighting. And then when the guy gets on top of him with the knife and is like putting all of his weight on it, and you think you're watching this and you think that his buddy's going to jump in and save him. And spoiler alert, he doesn't. As that knife slowly descends into his chest, it's just like, it is so gripping and so absolutely horrific. And I, even thinking about it, it's hard.
Now I want to go watch Saving Private Ryan. I think it's considered to be one of the best war movies out there for just how brutal it was at capturing, you know, like war, as much as the opening D-Day scene is, you know, this gruesome action set piece. I feel like a lot of, you know, I mean, I haven't been to war, so I can't per se, but a lot of war, you know, it was just these very close combat, gruesome, bloody, you know, fights, and to whoever was the last man standing is the one who told the story at the end, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. So what about you?
So, mine isn't specifically a scene, but it's just a movie in general. So there is a movie from the 90s. It was an independent movie called Gummo. I'm not surprised. I don't think it had a wide release. It's not a scary movie, but it's the one of the only movies that I have watched where I actually shut it off before it was over, just due to how uncomfortable that the whole thing made. Like, essentially the plot of it is, it's kind of like Napoleon Dynamite in the sense that there's no real overarching story. It's just a bunch of things kind of happening in this town. And so it's this very, very poor town. I feel like, if I'm trying to remember, after like a tornado has come through, so the town is in even more of a, you know, state of disarray. And it's just a bunch of the characters kind of going about their lives. And so much about it is like, it's just kind of like very gross. Like, it's not like, there's garbage everywhere. And like, for example, there's a weird scene where the one main character, he's sitting in the bathtub and he's like washing his face and hair, but he's also eating like a plate of like spaghetti and meat sauce in the tub, and like water's getting on it and spaghetti's getting in the bath. And just like, it's not horrifying, but it's really gross.
What's wrong with that? It's like eating lasagna at the movie theater.
It is like that. See how it comes full circle. There's like even like a scene where there's these two boys and they're walking around and they have these bags on their back, and then they go down to this back alley, and you know, they're talking to the the guy who owns this restaurant. He comes up and he's paying them. He said, "Oh, okay, yeah, good, good. I'm glad you guys came." And he hands the bag, and it's just a bag of dead cats at this restaurant because they can't get supplies. Is, you know, using the meat from that to serve at the restaurant. And like, it's just little things like that. And it was, I've never felt so just uncomfortable. And there's the voiceover, the one main character. It is just such a weird, I don't know if I could say I wouldn't recommend it, because I think it's a very interesting movie, but it's just one that, you know, I still, if I think about a movie that made me feel uncomfortable and squirm in my seat, it was that movie.
Well, it certainly doesn't make me want to watch that movie.
No, you'd probably be okay to skip on that one. I don't think it's going to be coming to the Falcon anytime soon. So
probably not. Yeah.
No.
Okay. Well, that wraps it up. We're about an hour in or so. So another good episode of the Falcon Theater podcast. Don't you think?
I thought this might have been our best one yet.
I always think it's our best one yet, though.
Are we biased?
Well, yeah, but that's okay. It's our podcast.
Okay. And if you don't like it, screw you.
And if you do like it, well, thank you for listening. We really, really appreciate all of those people who do listen.
And the ones that come out to the theater itself and, you know, keep it running.
Leave your phone in your pocket. Yeah, yeah, you bet. All right. Well, you guys take care, and we'll see you at the movies.
Bye-bye.